the ability to share, especially where there are common themes that are popping up, that I think is real power. Mm. And if you try to deal with it only unto the things that your organization is experiencing, if you're a static organization, maybe that works. But in our case, we're a growing company. And so there are stair steps or milestones that we're hitting that we're having to evaluate that we didn't have to consider 2 years ago. Yeah. And then there's the climate of what our clients are demanding, and that's also increasing.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, Steve speaks with David Weisong, CIO of Information Systems at Energy Solutions, a growing company with many U.S. government clients. He speaks with Steve about his experiences overseeing a full migration of the company's security framework, how he got buy-in for security from the C-suite, and how he has approached the challenge of staffing.
David, nice to see you. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. Now, David, you're the CIO, Information Systems at Energy Solutions. Tell us a little bit about that. What do you get up to?
Our company is in the space of providing clean energy solutions, mostly for utilities, but also for state and federal contracts as well. And we're nearing about 500 employees. And we're a little unique in terms of our technology. We have kind of the standard fare that you'd find with another 500-person company. But we also develop software solutions for the market-based programs that we operate here in the U.S. And so we have kind of an extended set of technical needs that we work on. And then, of course, compliance is a huge part of that.
Right. So tell me about security. How does security fit into all of that?
Yeah. So security is actually at the center of what we do. Our clients have zero tolerance for less than security that they would have. So they have a set of standards that we're contractually obligated to that very much parallel what they do as a much larger organization. Some of our utility clients are over 100,000 employees. So these are large quasi-government type entities that have a very high standard for cybersecurity and compliance. And as they evaluate working with different vendors, this is a huge competitive advantage when you can effectively check the boxes, which is why we've adopted a couple different initiatives in terms of security frameworks that we operate under and, you know, perform annual audits and so forth.
So tell us about that. You say they're different. What is different about them?
Yeah, so the frameworks aren't, I mean, they're standards. So SOC 2 is the standard that we began with, which, you know, is pretty standard fare, 100 and some controls, annual audits, and then, of course, in-scope systems. So systems that we develop internally, and then we apply the security controls and the compliance framework to those software code bases. And more recently, we've adopted NIST standards. So that gives us an opportunity to really strengthen and get more prescriptive about what we're doing with very detailed like remediation plans or automated remediation plans for both our enterprise and hosted environments.
So it's pretty fundamental, really, to the way in which, you know, what you're doing is has an impact on not just your own organization, but these other organizations that you're talking about now. When you stepped into that role, were you surprised by what you saw? And if so, in what way?
Yeah, my last role came out of commercial software, which, of course, you know, has a decent amount of security and compliance surrounding it, and specifically payment systems that I led a team to work through. But this is kind of a whole new level. This was very much, and I'll never forget this, in the first year, one of our largest utility clients took our security documentation, our SOC 2 annual report, and then they volleyed back a 1,600 question attestation. And it was like, okay, so here's our what's the culmination of a year of getting our audit in place. And they said, check. And then they said, now, please answer this. Yep. And what was notable to me was the following year, that same questionnaire came again. And so not only did we need third-party validation, not only did we need, you know, to kind of in a binary fashion answer security attestation, you know, documents, but the documents even changed year to year in that it used to be, you know, are you observing maybe this access control paradigm or not, to are you doing this access control, yes or no, and if not, when will you be? So it got very prescriptive. And I mean, it definitely was the writing on the wall that we would have to effectively forecast where our clients were going, because they would be asking the same from their internal operations as of their vendors. And so that was different, meaning in commercial software, as long as we went through, you know, PADSS and went through our PCI compliance, we were fine. But this was actually, in order for us to be awarded business and to be a vendor of a particular client or set of clients, we needed to kind of raise to their benchmark. And it was changing. It was not static. And I got to see that because I would look back at previous attestations, previous contract, if there was a renewal 2 or 3 years later, and I would look at the delta of what they were asking. And it wasn't static. It was quite dynamic and more rigorous, basically.
I mean, it's interesting listening to you talking about that, David, because you're coming across as being very sort of pragmatic, fairly balanced about it. And I'm contrasting that with some people who talk to me about some of the things, you know, that are very similar, who are quite the opposite, because they're feeling this frustration of, to your point, you've gone through processes, you've got certain policies, you've provided them all, and yet then you get hit with, on an annual basis, yet another questionnaire that people have to take time out to complete. I mean, in terms of advice for these guys who are getting all, you know, hot under the collar about it, whose blood pressure is rising, what sort of advice can you give them? Because as I say, you seem fairly balanced about it.
Well, maybe I'm coming off balance. The jump from SOC 2 to, say, NIST, 800-53, for instance, is a giant jump, actually. It's, you know, triple the number of controls. It is a heavy lifting exercise. I think where I've come to peace is this is what's required of our organization to do business, again, with very large enterprises, state agencies, and federal contracting. So this is the standard. We can't work our way around it. And for our company, we're a mission-based company. Our objective is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's on the front page of our website. We believe in that. We believe the way that we are contributing to that goal is important. And we know that we actually need to do business with these type of clients that are going to have an elevated, if not most, you know, some of the most rigorous security demands, you know, contractually that we would do. I mean, given a different set of clients, they may have very little interest in what we're doing specifically around cybersecurity and compliance. But it is where it's going. So I think when I saw the level, when it became that your SOC 2 audit was no longer the standard, that was just a check. That was one question on a 1600 question attestation. Right. And then it was provide evidence. When I saw that, I was like, okay, we have to look at this completely different. We have to look at, and it's hard for an organization like ours that's growing significantly each year. We have to actually bake this into the fabric of our company. This can't be an afterthought. You can't do a NIST, you know, framework. You can't just say, well, let's go ahead and do that in 3 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not possible. And it's actually not a case of money. It's a case of organization and collective system and work to get there. So it's the long game. It's something I think that I figured out pretty quickly. And we're not awesome in every single category, but we are constantly improving. And moreover, I think the companies support an understanding like that this is how we have to operate as an organization. It gives me some strength in assembling the team and the strategy for meeting, you know, what is otherwise pretty grueling security frameworks and standards and sustaining audits with no qualified opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about how you went about gaining that business-based buy-in, because again, that is something that people often come to me and say, you know, banging my head against a wall here, what are some tips?
Yeah, so right now I'm one of five executives at the company. When I came to the company, IT and information systems was part of a larger unit, a business services unit. And I remember having a pretty candid conversation with our president at the time, saying that I wasn't interested in joining an organization where, you know, effectively IT was not a unique seat at the executive table. And I had had plenty of experience in organizations where that was the case. I don't think there's a filter that you should apply, or it should be secondary in terms of priority for all things, you know, IT in an organization. I feel quite strongly that it's a pervasive, kind of horizontally cutting discipline in an organization and deserves an individual seat at the table. So that was the first important thing to reconcile with this particular organization, is it had to mature to a place of saying, IT is a seat at this table. Mm-hmm. The second part was understanding that both our executive team and our leadership team are supremely smart in their individual disciplines. And it's awesome to be on a team like that.
Right.
So what is missing sometimes, and I wouldn't say it was completely missing, but it needed fostering, was bringing a level of awareness and education around this discipline of IT. It's not ultimately my job to say, oh, well, we've successfully implemented security frameworks. We have a smooth running, you know, IT and, you know, IS offering. It's actually part of the organization. And I think that's where there's a lot of patience, because there's lots of competing priorities in a small growing company, to say, here's why it's important. Here's where this becomes a stopper. Meaning, if we don't supply an attestation or a particular security initiative, we actually don't move forward with contracting. So it has a material effect on our business. We're a professional services organization. So, you know, our contracts are the foundation. And if they're not 100% met, then you actually don't proceed. So it became very easy to say there's cause and effect here.
Right.
And that's where that's taken a lot of repeat exposure, I think, is one part of it. But also setting the stage that it's dynamic. It's not like, oh yeah, we're done with that, so we can just kind of move on. It's like, we're done with this particular, you know, initiative right now, and there are more, and it will be changing probably quarter to quarter. So setting an expectation that this is not a static environment. And I think that is just an ongoing part of my role in the organization.
What are some of the biggest challenges in your sector, do you think, that companies face when it comes to security?
I think, as I stated at the beginning, we have, you know, a classic enterprise environment. We've migrated all of our core systems are all cloud-based, you know, which is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. That is a dynamic environment to keep protected and to make sure that you're following best practices. And really, it seems like there's an entire industry that wants to kind of upset that. And I give, you know, some of that lip service that it's an industry, but there are individuals or teams or groups that want to unsettle, you know, the standard infrastructure. Probably what compounds that for me as a challenge is that we have a full software company inside of our company. Right. And so that is a different level of commitment when you're doing business with the larger organizations that we interact with. And that, again, is a changing environment, but it's also one that we have a number of applications. So the complexity of that And maybe you could even state it differently. The sheer volume of managing more in-scope systems 1 year to the next, that's a real challenge if your staffing doesn't necessarily follow a curve along with that. Mm-hmm. And that's the competing priorities of getting things to market, being in a position where you can sustain audits, but knowing that you'll probably have one or two more systems that you'll be bringing online next year. And yeah. So there's a volume of work there to manage that. And so automation becomes essential to that. And then predictively being in the place where you have to look for solutions that maybe draw your circle around a problem. You know, it's not good enough to have maybe endpoint protection. You have to think more holistically, for instance, you know, around your overall security profile for all systems that you deploy, all cloud systems you have through vendors, and then, of course, hosted environments like AWS where we manage our software applications.
Mm. You mentioned staffing there on the way through. I mean, obviously, having a good team that you can hold on to is pretty fundamental in any line of business. And, you know, again, it's one from a security standpoint that I think a lot of organizations struggle with. How are you handling that particular challenge?
Yeah, so we were extremely fortunate when I initially started at Energy Solutions. I both directed and performed all of the duties relative to our audits. So I wore a lot of hats and was pretty busy in that orchestration. We moved to a place where we needed a dedicated full-time manager of IT security and compliance. We found a quite excellent individual who came to us with a really good experience and also, you know, had a, I think, you know, it's one thing to be in an enterprise company. It's another thing to, in his case, move up through, you know, having his own MSP practice and then moving into more of the vertical of security for larger enterprise. Yep. And so that was a turning point for us because that also correlated with us having more demands from our clients. So it's almost serendipitous that we have a dedicated person and then contract renewals and new contracts kind of up the game of what they were requiring of our company. And since then, charting out how we bring individuals to that security team, and that's their entire job. You know, mm-hmm. you look at a company with 500 people and you can say, wow, there's, you know, two or three full-time people, their only job is cybersecurity and compliance. Right. And then justifying that, obviously, with the business, again, a lot of competing priorities. But for us, it points right back to it's essential for us to have these people in order for us to get the work that we think has the highest impact.
Yeah. I mean, lots of strong messages coming through, David. You know, I'm sitting here listening. You know, it's about alignment, isn't it? You know, security, technology with the business. It's about communication. It's about making sure that people understand the implications of not doing something, but also, more importantly, the benefits of actually getting things done smarter, better, call it what you will. How do you think the future is going to impact your piece of the business? I mean, so if you looked forward, let's just say, you know, couple to 3 years, I mean, you're in a very fast paced part of the sector of business, the renewable energy sector. And we, you know, I think many people are very, very hopeful for the way that that evolves and develops. How do you see the future panning out? Is it going to be one that is going to be full of emerging threats? Is it going to get easier for you? Tell us a bit about that.
I wish I had a better, a better outlook. I think from my perspective, I think it's going to be more organized attacks, more what I'll call gross vulnerabilities. You know, we've built our, you know, internet cloud infrastructure on a set of things that don't take into account that there might be malice.
Right.
So I actually, you know, it's remarkable that we still have some of the vulnerabilities. And I mean, there are solutions out there, but they are root vulnerabilities that we need to be mindful of. And so I think it's probably going to get worse in terms of responding or reacting to the kind of dynamic threat collection that's coming. I think we're in a space where it's also where solutions are overlapping. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about, you know, say for our, you know, we manage, you know, a fleet of systems for our staff. We talk about how many agents we have on those systems. And it's not all beautiful and perfect. Maybe the one way you could draw a metaphor to this is it's kind of like medications. Sometimes there's interaction that you don't want right. between, you know, agents, whether it's encryption management, local to, you know, the system, to remote monitoring and management, to endpoint virus or antivirus protection. There's a lot of things that are being put onto platforms or systems that you sometimes get into the area where you might have a unique combination of things that creates problems. And so that's where I think the industry is looking at it still in a category basis. Mm-hmm. I think there's a need for a more holistic approach, dare I say, coordination or cooperation between companies and their solution offerings. And then I think from a cost standpoint, it's just understanding that, you know, some things you can't do at a smaller scale or at least a smaller revenue-based company because of sheer cost. And mm-hmm. so having solutions to help drive that down through automation can be really helpful. You know, the cost of just an annual SOC 2 audit or cost of a NIST audit is significant. Probably more striking is the cost of cybersecurity insurance. Right. Our organization has to have a significant amount of cybersecurity insurance, which is contractually required. It's not, I mean, we would probably be otherwise fine with a certain dollar amount, but it's quite literally double that dollar amount of coverage that's required by our clients. And so that's tough. I think that's where the budgeting and where kind of IT then will show up as like, oh, wow, next year our costs have gone up dramatically. What are we getting for that?
Right.
And the answer is, well, people don't see the threats. So you're getting some insurance, you know, using mm-hmm. that metaphor, against what could happen, whether it's data breaches or just chaos on the solutions that you deploy. You're protecting against that. And that's what the extra cost is all about. But I think that's where, from an industry perspective, having more holistic solutions or an ability to have interactions between vendors so that you're not just trying to, like, I feel like in our case, we are scanning the horizon for all of the things, whether it's remote monitoring and management, endpoint security encryption, endpoint antivirus, password management. I mean, you name these categories, and we're trying to find the best balance. And of course, budget is something to consider, but it's a lot. It's a lot for, you know, a small or mid-sized company to do that. And I think we're going to have to even do more.
Yeah. I think sadly, you're right. I think, you know, for the small to mid-sized enterprise, I talk about this a lot. I think that the overall burden, whether it be in regulation, whether it be to the point you just made, you know, insurance, whether it just be in the cost of trying to keep up with what is going on with relatively small teams, these are all sorts of things that really, yes, are essential, but also, if you're not careful, can really hamper the way in which your organization is able to develop. And I think it's one of the reasons why we see so many of our members within the ISF, you know, now displaying much more of a willingness to share some of that information. It's always been a very sharing environment that we've had, but I've certainly noticed over the last 18 months or so, people have been very much more inclined to share that kind of thing and to reach out and help, particularly throughout the supply chain. You know, you mentioned the large-scale vendors there, the organizations that you have to deal with, and this realization that the small to mid-size is fundamental to some of these bigger organizations' success. And so there needs to be much more collaboration and co-working in that space.
Yeah, I think you said something that kind of piqued something in my head. The ability to share is generally how we learn. A solution that a vendor comes to you with that may be brilliant, but you don't have a need right away, you don't have context for it. So the ability to share, I think, gives you context that maybe you don't have to learn the hard lesson. And when I think about, you know, the 3 to 5 year window, I mean, there is clearly more fraud and more cybersecurity attacks. It is significant, and it's not decreasing. And so the ability for both organizations to share and for the industry that's serving up different solutions, there has to be a coordination and a collaboration around that, because the priority could change from year to year. And so it's something that we don't do this year because it's not in the budget may need to get elevated quite quickly. And when you have that type of collaboration and sharing about, hey, this is a wave, this is coming, this gives you the ability to prepare and respond to something versus react. And react is always, you know, that's just a huge, huge energy burden for any company. But I also think that I think of IT sometimes as like a utility service. Most of the time, people don't contact their utility and say, thank you for 364.75 days of perfect delivery of electricity.
Right.
And from an IT perspective, most organizations don't say, thank you for 364.75 days of uptime with no breaches, no attacks, everything worked as advertised. And so the ability to share, especially where there are common themes that are popping up, that I think is real power. And if you try to deal with it only unto the things that your organization is experiencing, if you're a static organization, maybe that works. But in our case, we're a growing company. And so there are stair steps or milestones that we're hitting that we're having to evaluate that we didn't have to consider 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then there's the climate of what our clients are demanding, and that's also increasing. And so, you know, having good conversation, even with our clients and their IT teams, would be helpful. But I think what you said about it, you know, not a lot of that is going on, really rings true right now. And I think that needs to change.
Yeah, and I think it's the time as well. You know, it's the time that needs to be invested to make that happen. But in the long run, certainly what our members tell us is that it's time well spent, because it saves you at the other end. So, so yeah, David, look, it's been fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing some of your insights and some of the things that you've been doing, some good tips, I think, there for the way in which our listeners might want to think about, you know, realigning perhaps with the business and more closely involved with some of the business. And wish you well in what I'm sure is going to be a really exciting future. You're in a fascinating space. But David, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks to this week's guest, David Weisong. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.